This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our Instagram feed with great photography from the Jets games, from the whiteout party that's happening outside the arena, and from the viewing parties as well. You can check it out, Instagram.com/Illegal Curve.
I have a ticket for you, by the way, for the street party.
Thank you.
I'll sell it to you for $100.
I appreciate your generosity. Your free ticket? Thanks so much. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live. Live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Ben Raby. Ben is the Washington Capitals radio host. Ben, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
How are you, fellas? Good to be with you.
Appreciate it, Ben. Obviously, a big win last night for the Capitals. They go into Tampa Bay, and they steal home ice advantage early in that series. I got to say, you know, the Capitals looked like a team that was on a mission last night, and the Lightning looked a little lethargic. How surprised were you at the turn of events last night?
Yeah, certainly it was, what was it, the 13th postseason game the Capitals have played, arguably one of their best. I think you could throw the Game 6 victory in Pittsburgh along with that. And good on the Capitals. You know, there was some thought that maybe they would have a little bit of a letdown, right, coming off that emotional win at long last, getting past the Pittsburgh Penguins after years of disappointments against the rival. But no, they kept the momentum going last night against Tampa Bay. And you know what, fellas, it's easy to look at that 4-0 lead and, you know, the offensive side of the game for the Capitals. But what they did last night defensively, very, very impressive and really limiting, as you guys know, a very potent offense for Tampa Bay.
You know, Ben, you just mentioned the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Capitals defeat the Pittsburgh Penguins. They finally slay that dragon, and then they win Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Final 4-2, and they won both of those games without Nicholas Backstrom. You've got Lars Eller centering that second line. How are they doing this without Nicholas Backstrom, and when should we expect him back in the lineup?
Yeah, still day-to-day, according to head coach Barry Trotz. That being said, we haven't seen Nick Backstrom skate with the team, either an optional practice or a morning skate or anything like that. So we'll see if he's back tomorrow for Game 2. I would think it might be a little bit later on in the series at this point. But very impressive that they've been able to go at this point 2-0 without Nick Backstrom. Lars Eller has certainly been picking up the slack, elevated to that second-line center position and the top power play unit. Eller scored last night with the man advantage. So good on Lars Eller taking advantage of an opportunity. And a little bit lower down the depth chart, you know, he had a rookie in Travis Boyd, made his NHL postseason debut in Game 6 in Pittsburgh. And last night, you know, sliding to the third line center position, maybe not a household name, but rookie Chandler Stephenson, who's had a very, very good season, his first full NHL campaign. He was centering the third line last night. So you look at different guys who have been stepping up, but certainly Eller, Travis Boyd in Game 6, a rookie, and last night Chandler Stephenson among those who have been picking up the slack.
Well, speaking of picking up the slack, Ben, you know, you can't win the Stanley Cup without a red-hot goaltender, and Braden Holtby's had a bit of an unusual regular season. How do you think he's handled, especially, you know, the way the playoffs started for Washington, how do you think he's adjusted and really taken the reins for this team?
Sorry, just broke up there a little bit at the end regarding Holtby since he's been back in the starters.
Yeah, exactly. Just so he's regained the starters position in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like eons ago, right, that Philip Grubauer started the postseason as the number one, games 1 and 2 against the Columbus Blue Jackets. But good on Braden Holtby. You know, there's a thought, you know, I don't know that I necessarily subscribe to this, but there's a thought that perhaps in years past when he was playing north of 65, even 70 games during the regular season, there was a little bit of wear and tear on him come the postseason, that the volume of games he had played caught up to him. This year, as it turns out, it wasn't by design, but the way the regular season played out, Philip Grubauer carried some of the load the second half of the regular season. And since Holtby took over the starting role in Game 3 of the first round, you know, as Barry Trotz has relayed to us, he told Barry Trotz, Braden Holtby did, once you put me in, I'm not going to give up the cage again. And he's been true to his word. He's 9-2 in his starting assignment so far this postseason, and he's been terrific. No doubt, you need the goaltending, and the Capitals been getting it. And good on Holtby, because you know, not unlike Carey Price in Montreal this year, right? It was a rough regular season for someone who is otherwise considered one of the best goaltenders in the league, but unlike Carey Price, Holtby has had the opportunity in the postseason, of course, to change that narrative, and good on him, because so far he certainly has.
Ben Raby is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Washington Capitals. They take a 1-0 series lead over the Tampa Bay Lightning with their 4-2 victory last night. Ben, John Carlson gets all the headlines on the Capitals' back end. He's going to get all the money this offseason as he's an unrestricted free agent. But I want to talk to you about Dmitry Orlov. He's been absolutely huge for the Capitals during this playoff run, playing upwards of 25, 27 minutes a game on some nights, even up to 36 minutes a game in that first round overtime game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Just how key and how essential has Dmitry Orlov been to the Capitals' success on the back end this year?
Yeah, he's come a long way, and maybe a little bit under the radar, to your point, Matt Niskanen and John Carlson, you know, usually getting the headlines as far as the offensive productivity a little bit. But Orlov paired with Matt Niskanen, that's the number one pairing for the Capitals, used in a lot of shutdown roles, that type of thing. And to that point, Dmitry Orlov in his career, he's come a long way. Years ago, you know, to quote general manager Brian McClellan, Dmitry Orlov was a high event player. In other words, the old high risk, high reward. He's been able to pick his spots a little bit better, and now he could be trusted in those late game situations, you know, protecting one goal leads and going out against the other team's top line. Wasn't always the case with Dmitry Orlov, but he certainly rounded out his game. He's always had the offensive upside, but, you know, he sort of locked it down a little bit, been more responsible in his own end, limiting the turnovers, that type of thing. Wasn't always the case earlier in his career. Like I said, high event player, but he's certainly come a long way and very much a key cog here in Washington.
Oh, Ben, we often talk about that top line of the Washington Capitals, Kuznetsov, Ovechkin, and Wilson. Then after that, obviously, you normally see Nicholas Backstrom centering that second line. TJ Oshie is a player that we know for many years has been a great player. But when you look at the scoring depth of the Washington Capitals, Jay Beagle scored a big goal. That was the Capitals' third goal yesterday. Brett Connolly, he scored a couple goals in these playoffs. Is this bottom six of the Capitals maybe a little bit underrated when you compare it to some of the other teams in the league, such as the Jets or the Predators when they were still in the playoffs?
Yeah, no, they've been stepping up, and actually a big, big difference from a year ago. If you could believe this, in their seven-game series against Pittsburgh last year, so a series that went to distance, seven games, they literally had a big zero when it came to the bottom six in terms of goals and offensive production. And a big difference this postseason throughout the playoffs. They've been getting that from the bottom six. We referenced Lars Eller. He's been playing second line now without Backstrom, but for the most part, your third line setter is Lars Eller. Came up with potentially a season-saving, game-winning goal back in the first round. Again, feels like a while ago now, but keep in mind, they were down 2-0 to Columbus in round one and had to win game three in double overtime. And it took a goal from the third line. Eller had the winner. It was from Connolly and Devontae Smith-Pelly. But to that point, Connolly, Smith-Pelly, Chandler Stephenson, who we referenced a few minutes ago, yeah, they've been getting productivity down the lineup. And Jay Beagle last night coming up with the game winner. So I will say, though, fellas, it's different than in years past. In years past for the Capitals, like a lot of folks are asking, what's the difference this year for the Capitals as opposed to seasons past when they had those premature playoff exits? Certainly the productivity from the bottom six, the secondary guys, if you will, among those differences.
You know, Ben, have to ask you about Alexander Ovechkin. I mean, he seems to be a player possessed. Have you ever seen him as determined as he has been this playoff season?
Certainly this is up there, no doubt. You know, I think that there might be a narrative out there. I think it's a tired narrative from earlier in his career. There were suggestions earlier in his career. He didn't much care what they were doing come springtime, which I, again, never much subscribed to. But there's no doubt now in his 13th NHL season, 32 years of age, more than 1,000 games under his belt. I think he's gained some perspective as well and, you know, is fully aware, as is Nick Backstrom, as is John Carlson, that you might only have so many opportunities and kicks to the can. And I'll tell you, fellas, being around him earlier this week following the win over the Pittsburgh Penguins, just a jovial Alex Ovechkin who was almost reminiscent of earlier in his career when he had that youthful exuberance, just on cloud nine right now and coming up big again last night with a goal and an assist, providing the screen early on Michael Kempney goals to get it going in the first period. But no question that, you know, he's at the big, big monkey off his back, a gorilla off his back, if you will, to get to the conference final. And you could sort of tell that throughout the week, how he carried himself. And, you know, I think it trickles down to the rest of the team. I really think since they eliminated Pittsburgh, it's just a tremendous weight, tremendous pressure that they could put in the rearview mirror now. And again, the momentum certainly carried into last night in Game 1 in the East Final.
Ben Raby is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's a Washington Capitals radio host. Ben, does Barry Trotz come back as the Capitals head coach next season, given that he's taking the team all the way to the Eastern Conference Final?
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, I know why you're asking the question. He is in the final year of his contract, and he has not received an extension to this point. I'll say this, though. If he's not coaching in Washington, you've got to figure he's going to be coaching somewhere, because this has been a terrific job he's done this year with a team that really was certainly not supposed to be in this position. Wasn't expected to win the Metropolitan Division. Wasn't expected to get to the conference final. And it has been a terrific, terrific job he's done this year with a Capitals team, which I think a lot of folks would agree is maybe not as talented and maybe not as deep as they have been in years past. I reference they're getting the bottom six production here in the postseason, but realistically on paper, this is not, you know, the President's Trophy winning Capitals rosters that they've had over the past few years. So kudos to Barry Trotz, in a little bit of an unorthodox spot there, working on the expiring contract, to have gotten the team to buy in. And really, the job he's done, particularly in the postseason here, the last few games without McBackstrom in the lineup, has just been tremendous. So they've had a terrific game plan defensively, and a lot of that credit certainly goes to him. So again, if he's not back in Washington, I don't see how other teams, you know, with vacancies potentially, would let that slip away.
Ben, final question for you here. Andre Burakovsky was injured earlier in the playoffs. He's back in the lineup now. Didn't score last night in Game 1 versus the Lightning. How big of a factor do you think Burakovsky is going to be in the Eastern Conference Final? Because we know, you know, his early on in his career, you know, he's been fairly inconsistent. But I think you would probably say that he's probably going to be looked upon for some secondary offense for the Capitals.
Yeah, well, you'd have to figure he'll be fresh now. I mean, he missed 10 games between rounds 1 and 2 before returning last night. I don't think he was quite himself last night. Maybe getting the timing back, not easy to do in the first game of the Eastern Conference Final. Fortunately, the Capitals were able to get the win last night despite that, but I have to figure it's a matter of time before he gets going again. And to your point about his inconsistency throughout his career, it's been one of the knocks on Andre Burakovsky. That being said, you know, like a lot of goal scorers, when they tend to go in for him, they do come in bunches. So we'll see if he can get back on track starting tomorrow in Game 2, but certainly a very welcome addition back to the lineup, as was Tom Wilson last night after serving his three-game suspension. So you got Burakovsky back, you got Wilson back. Now it's a matter of getting Backstrom back, and you have them all together, both the band back together, and for the most part, not unlike the Jets, right? You know, fairly healthy this time of year. It's not often you see that come mid-May.
Ben Raby is a Washington Capitals radio host. Ben, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Game 2 of the Capitals Lightning goes tomorrow.
Yeah, appreciate it, fellas. Thank you very much.
Take care, Ben. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets head coach Paul Maurice just met with the assembled media at Bell MTS Place. Here is what the Jets head coach had to say ahead of Game 1 tonight between the Jets and the Golden Knights.
When does the, for you and the coaching staff, you're tied up with your last series. When does the process for you start in scouting this team that you're playing now and kind of really digging in and formulating a game plan?
That would be ongoing as the other series go on between pro scouting and the videos already cut by the end of the national game. So before Game 7, Todd Woodcroft and Matt Prefontaine have the video done. The challenge with starting the next day is how much do you show? So you don't have as much time. You can't kind of feather it in over 3 days. You've got to pick what's most important. I think the players probably like that anyway. You know, forces you to shave the meat, because we're going with the same length of meeting. We're not adding time to it on a game day. Our exact routine. I got a number of clips that we show for kind of each special team, so that we'll just try to get. Our job is to get to the important pieces. And only show that.
Nick, second row on the right.
Sorry, we've talked in the past.
You got to ask your best question first going forward, Sean. Because there's a 50-50 chance the second one's not getting out.
We've talked about managing in the past. We've talked about managing highs and lows. I mean, that was a really big high for you guys in that last game, even for you behind the bench. What is the process of trying to come down from that and make sure you're focused for this?
We enjoyed the day and then talk about it yesterday. So, again, it's not the first time they've heard that speech. We've got to really work on our day yesterday of doing what we want to accomplish and then move on. But I'm not going to lie to you that that's what our concern is coming into the game, right? You finish a 7-game series. It was physical. It was exhausting. It was emotional. And now you've got to find a way to get back to that because human nature, it's not easy to get back up to that level. And that's our great challenge here tonight. We know based on their last layoff that they came out very, very fast and right on, right? So that game was over with San Jose, I don't know, 12 minutes into it. So we're going to have to find that level, get back to that level, or at least close enough to it to give ourselves a chance to make it valuable in the second and third period.
Nick Hutznicka, NHL.com. This sort of feeds into the quick turnaround. I guess that helps you focus on yourself. So my question as it relates to Vegas, what does it look like tonight if you're using your strengths and doing, you know, playing your game as it relates to them?
Well, that would be true as it relates to anyone. We have a team that skates well and has confidence to make the plays that are there. When we're on our game, we make the right choice. So we don't get the puck. We don't dump the puck unless that's the right place. We chip it. We want to have hit the line with speed. We want to be right in three zones in our positioning, but be a very, very aggressive team. That's not related to Vegas. That's how we would do it every night.
Larry, front row on the left.
Larry Lage, Associated Press. What do you know and appreciate about coaching in this game that you couldn't have 20 years ago?
Oh, how darn hard it is to get there. And I don't know that I learned that on my own from my own experience, but you know, so this is my third trip, and nobody had predicted the first two, and maybe not even the third going into the season. We would have been the eighth seed for the most part. But when you, again, I mentioned this yesterday, you have Paul Stastny, who's played on some really good teams over the years, and how difficult it is for very good teams right from the start just to get to this point. So Nashville and Pittsburgh in this year are that example. Nashville's the best team in the NHL over 82. They're an outstanding team. Pittsburgh's learned all the lessons that you need to learn to win. Clearly, they've proven that. And they've got, for a big bulk of their A players, are healthy. And it's still tough to get through. Well, that's like the Oscars when the sound goes down. Did you guys? Yeah, you missed that. Anyway, that was my chance to get off. But I've got it on my iTunes. It'll be coming up in a minute. So how difficult it is to get here. That ties into, and I'm sure Vegas is having a similar experience. We talk about enjoying our day all the time. Now, I'm not talking about leisurely enjoying your day, but this is a great league. It's a great experience. We've got a great room. You want to enjoy every day. I'd like to think that that's what you saw in Game 7 from us, that we had gotten to that point that, you know, yeah, there was a lot of pressure and it's a big stage, but they found a way to have fun before the puck dropped, to be excited about that event. So what I've learned is, in a short answer, is it's special. So you want to be at your best, you want to perform at your best. The players, the coaches, we all want our A game, but we want to be able to enjoy the process of getting ready for it.
Second row on the left.
Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press. Paul, obviously when you get to this stage, there's a bigger spotlight, potentially more distractions. So is there anything you have to do to try and block that out? I know, for instance, players are mic'd up and there's video in dressing rooms, things that don't always happen just in regular season games. Is that something that you have to manage, or it just comes naturally?
You manage it, no, not at all. You manage it as much as you can. There are changes. I mean, given a choice, I wouldn't wear a mic. Unlucky, I swear so much that they can't use much of what I say, unless they beep the whole thing out, so I'm in good shape. But there are a lot of these things then that come into your room that weren't there before, and that goes back to, and then it's today, right? Instead of eight of you, there's, you know, a big crew, and then, so the players are dealing with that. Now families are interested in coming in, and I think Jamie Compan got 130 texts after that game. I got 17, right? He's a way better guy than I am. People like him. But there's time constraints now on time you normally have to do other things. So we talk about managing that. We talked about that before the playoffs even started, that as you move forward, there's going to be more and more things. In some ways, this actually gets easier. The media part, for me anyway, gets easier because it's managed harder. You get your 10 minutes, and then they don't want me talking to you guys in the hallway. So don't take it personally, right? That's the league rules. It's these guys. But some of it becomes easier, but there's way more outside. But we talk about that all the time. Just run our routine, do our day, and keep it inside the room.
Have you seen the clip from Game 5 in Nashville where you yell at Patrick Laine to move his feet, and then you say, or just do that, as he rips a shot in off Paul Stastny? Is that part of your coaching strategy?
I was yelling at Nicky.
Oh, Nicky to
move
his
feet. Yeah, it was Nicky to move his feet, or do that. I yelled at Jeff Sanderson one night in Vancouver from the top of our circles all the way to shoot the puck. I mean, he was basic. And he beat five guys, came back and beat three of them again and put a top shelf, and that's the first time or do that came out of my mouth.
Take a couple more for Coach on the right.
Josh Clifford at the Canadian Press. You talked about the 8:30 start versus the 6 o'clock start and how you didn't like how your team came out, especially here. What were some of the tangible things that you didn't like about those games, and how is it different for a 6 o'clock?
I would say, though, that I didn't think that it was a great game for either team, all three. We won 6-2, so there's lots I liked about that game, right? But I that was just – it's not a complaint. We are used to now – with where we are, all different kind of start times. That would be the one that we'd never experienced before. Those are three home losses. We had two, and we're a real good home team. Nashville has a home loss, and they were big score games, but the hockey was, I didn't think the hockey was quite as good in that three-game block. Part of it is probably because we lose two, right? So we've got to get used to it. In Winnipeg, our schedule is really, truly different than everybody else's. Right, our travel time. We got a one-hour flight to Minnie, and after that, you know, it's 2 hours is the least. We're getting off the plane at 2 and 3 in the morning all the time. So we have different times. 8:30 was just one that we weren't particularly used to. I think if it happened again, it really wouldn't be as big a deal. It's part of the learning process for our team.
Marty, front row on the right.
Marty Klinkenberg from the Globe and Mail. You've done this been doing this for a while now. How does this season stack up when you look back, and what keeps you doing what you're doing?
Well, I mean, the first was I almost feel like I just kind of came into the league. I'm still a real young guy. There are younger coaches now. This team is different for me, and we'd say this year, but you could see it 2 years ago, and last year especially. This would be the most skilled group that I've ever coached, and it really wouldn't be close. Now, I've coached some teams that had some pretty good men on it that would work real hard, and the team always worked real hard, but there wouldn't be a list of teams that were ever picked to get to the 16 at the start that I had coached, which has turned out to be a real good thing, right? You learn the details, you learn to grind, how to find a little bit more out of a group. But these guys are... This is a different group. We can play a completely different game. And from a coach's point of view, it's way more fun to coach a group like this instead of, we don't really manage the mistakes. You know, we're trying to find places to be good. Where is our strengths? How can we get more of our strengths in the game? Where if you're knowing that if there's going to be three or four goals in the game, your team's not winning, you're managing mistakes, you can't make any. So, it's the only thing I've done since I'm 20 years old. My skill set's really not applicable to a whole lot of other things. You can't swear on the job in a lot of places, I don't think. So I'm kind of tied into it now.
We'll take one more question. Nick on
the piggybacking on a couple of the others. I remember when you coached in the KHL and you had the language barrier, and you talked about how you had to learn to really simplify your message.
Right.
How have you evolved since that experience? How does that apply to now?
It was, there was a moment early on in Russia walking down the hallway and wanted to say something to a younger player, and then there's a real pecking order there, right? The young guys, you don't talk to them and then all of that. But he had played really well, and I kind of cared for the guy because he was a great story. His His parents had passed away. He had a special needs brother that he cared for himself and played pro hockey. He was just a great kid, and he had played two really. And I wanted to, you know, acknowledge that, and couldn't because there was absolutely no English. I might have had more Russian than he had English, and it really made me think. I have never spoken enough to the players. Right, reach out for the good things. Make sure that they know. I'm not throwing around a lot of compliments, so I do that way more. Try to acknowledge those guys, and the simplicity part was, I think I'd have to give Ralph Kruger a little bit of credit for that. My experience at the World Cup 2 years ago, it reminded me. We had a 30-year-old team. We weren't particularly, we were okay, right? But we played a really simple game, coached in a simple style, and had good success with it. So last summer we spent as a staff really the entire summer figuring out what's the simplest thing that we can do with our group to be good in all areas, all zones, all parts of our game. Shave it right down to a simpler teaching message and only talk about those things. Because we felt that was the only way we could play faster, and we had speed, like we could play fast. So that's kind of how that... So it started in Russia and maybe some communications, but the World Cup with Ralph, kind of a light went off that maybe I don't need. I still cut 130 clips. Ralph would only let me show 10, which I thought was insanity, but he was on to something.
To play fast, it has to be simple, right? Because you don't want them thinking about too much, right? You want
our line is simple is fast, right? It's not an indictment of your skill level, right? Keep it simple, stupid. I never liked that one. These guys aren't stupid. They're really, really good. But if you're really good, you can do things at a higher rate of speed than other people. And that's kind of the idea.
Thanks, Coach.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN1290. You're listening to the program as part of Winnipeg Jets Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. Drew Mindell alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Moose Jaw Warriors, we're pleased to welcome to the program Jet Wu. Jet is, of course, a Winnipegger. He's expected to be drafted in the upcoming 2018 NHL Draft. Jet, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Jet obviously brought you on to talk about your season, talk about the upcoming NHL Draft and how you're preparing for that. You know, the Warriors' season came to an end recently. Overall, though, you know, you had a bit of an injury-riddled season with a couple different stints on the IR. How would you describe, how would you assess the season you had for the Warriors?
You know, I think from a team perspective, we accomplished a lot of our goals throughout the year. One of our goals was to have a winning record and to become first place in the league. We knew we had a pretty good team at the beginning, so that was one of our goals, and we accomplished it. Going into the playoffs, losing in the second round, wasn't part of that plan, but in the season, it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I think the team learned a lot, and going into next year, I think we're going to take a lot from the playoffs that we learned, and hopefully be better.
Jet, we're about a month and a half away from the 2018 draft in Dallas, Texas. We've got obviously the NHL draft combine coming up in a couple of weeks at the end of May. But how have you been spending your time, in these weeks leading up to the NHL draft?
Yeah, it's exciting. I've been trying to soak in the moment and kind of trying to realize that, it was something that I've been, wanting since I was a little kid, seeing other guys getting drafted and playing in the NHL. But, I've been training. I've been, doing some rehab with some things and just trying to get back into the habit and trying to get, as fit as I can get going into the combine.
Jet, for our listeners, why don't you tell them a little bit about what you kind of player you are, and maybe what player you've modeled your game after in the NHL?
I model my game after Shea Weber. I've been actually been watching him for a long time, and you know, ever since I was a little kid, I've tried to make my game about defense and playing strong defense and trying to get offense out of that. But no, like I said before, ever since I was little, kind of playing D was always the biggest thing. And I think this year I tried to incorporate some more offense and try to turn my game into kind of a two-way. But if I were to look at my game, I'd say that playing defense and playing shutdown would be my biggest role.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jet Wu. Jet is a defenseman for the Moose Jaw Warriors. He's expected to be drafted in the upcoming 2018 NHL Draft. Jet, you've represented Canada on the international stage before on a number of different occasions at the Under-17 Hockey Challenge, at the Under-18 World Championship, and the Ivan Hlinka Memorial Tournament. What was it like for you getting to be able to wear the maple leaf on an international stage?
You know, it's a real experience. It's, you know, when I was a little kid, seeing Sidney Crosby scoring the overtime winner, and you know, it's just those little moments as when you put on the jersey that you remember, and it's almost kind of you know, a feeling of, you know, that you made it there, and that, you know, that the work's just getting started, and for so much to be, you know, so much to be coming. So, you know, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. Getting to know the coaches and the players and kind of learn about them and get to, you know, be friends with them off the ice and learn the systems of Hockey Canada and the ways of Hockey Canada and, you know, all the little things like to teach you about hydration and food preparation. It's all the little things that make the experience so much better. And, you know, I can't really, you know, thank Hockey Canada for all they've done for me.
Jet, I wanted to ask you about your dad, Larry Wu. He played as well in the Western Hockey League. He also played for the University of Manitoba Bisons. And you wouldn't know this, but I went to Kelvin High School, and your dad was actually the coach of the Kelvin High School team when I was in grade 11 and 12. But what kind of influence has your dad had on you throughout your hockey career?
You know, he's probably had the biggest influence on me. He was, you know, him or my mom would either drive me to hockey all the time, and he actually coached me a lot of the years growing up, and that helped, I think, with a little bit of my development. So he'd be my coach and explain on the bench, you know, what to do better, and then go up the next shift and try to do that. So, you know, I owe a lot of credit to him, and, you know, him playing in the Western Hockey League, and last year playing as a 16-year-old, him giving me some points and tips, you know, really helped. And but yeah, no, he's my dad. He's helped a lot. With me, you know, as a hockey player and as a person. So, yeah, I'm very thankful for that.
You know, Jed, how much attention do you pay to the rankings? You know, like where you may go? Is there a team you're thinking, oh, I may go to these guys? Like, do you factor that into your thinking as you lead up to the draft?
You know, it's obviously in the back of my head, but, you know, especially throughout the year, it was something that you try to push behind and you just try to keep playing your game and play the game that the team needs you to play, and you know that the team always comes first, and no matter what your ranking is, even if you're ranked, there because of what the team you know has done for you. And so that's kind of something that I've always kind of tried to remember, but no, it's obviously in the back of my head. Right now it's probably the last thing I'm thinking about. I'm just trying to, you know, get healthy and get fit going into the combine.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Jet Wu. Jet is a defenseman for the Moose Jaw Warriors, expected to be drafted at the upcoming 2018 NHL Draft. Jet, you know, on the back end with you on Moose Jaw, a couple other guys who've already been drafted. You got Josh Brook, who was drafted last year by the Montreal Canadiens in the second round. You have Cale Clegg, who was drafted by the Los Angeles Kings in the second round. You know, what was it like, you know, your relationship with those guys on your Moose Jaw Warriors teammates, and how much did you lean on them to sort of talk about their experiences in entering entering your draft eligible year?
Yeah, no, it's something that you know, going into my year is something that kind of helps me prepare for it. But you know, regarding Josh, you know, I've been best buddies with him since I can't even remember. We've been playing either together or we've known each other for such a long time, and for me to get drafted to Moose Jaw where he was drafted was, you know, something special for me. So I've been pretty good buddies with him, and for us to get Cale at the deadline was obviously huge, and to kind of get to know him off the ice and, you know, on the ice, and, you know, along with and other guys like Brett Howden that was drafted, and a lot of other guys. It's something that kind of can help you along, instead of other people. It's something that kind of they can give you tips and pointers when other guys may not. Along with them and Tim Hunter, who also played, it's something that kind of helps me and kind of understand, get the nose and of everything that might be going on.
Jet, we talked about the NHL Draft Combine earlier. It's coming up at the end of the month, early June. Personally, though, what are you expecting? What are your expectations for yourself and out of the NHL Combine, in addition to, wind sprints and all of those kind of cardiovascular and, strength tests that they put you through?
Yeah, I feel great right now. It's, the biggest thing for me getting back after the season was to get healthy, and I'm feeling pretty good right now. And, right now as I'm training, we're just trying to amp it up a little bit more so that when I go to the combine, it isn't as strenuous. And, I got a great trainer and a great, facility behind me. So, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to try to have as much fun as I can.
Jed, how much change have you seen in your game playing in junior hockey? Have you noticed that there's been a big change in development?
In development, of course. It's like I said, having Tim Hunter and the whole coaching staff and everything behind you. It's obviously the development changes. And regarding my game, it's always been defense first. And whenever the team needs me, whatever position they need, it's that always comes first. So. It's something where you always try to improve your game, but always, kind of remember what got you there in the first place and to trust the coaches and the team. And that's how I kind of think about it.
Jed, I'm sure you've got this question many times before, so I'm going to ask you the cliche question about your name. But you are from Winnipeg. Does your name have anything to do with the Winnipeg Jets? Why did your parents decide to call you Jed? And have you been watching a lot of the Winnipeg Jets playoff run? I imagine you have, just being in Winnipeg and all the pandemonium going on in the city right now.
Yeah, no, it's regarding the Jets, I've actually been to one street party so far, and I think I'm going to the game tonight as well. So. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't been to a playoff game in a while, but regarding my name, it actually wasn't from the Jets. The story that I heard was Jet Li was actually coming to Winnipeg to shoot a movie, but and my grandparents were gonna billet him, but I guess he had a better offer in Hollywood, which turned out well for him. But I guess just my grandparents. Hearing that name and then passing it on to my dad, and I think that's where my name came from.
By the way, Jet, we got a tweet from Claude Thornbird, and he said, Sally Wu's grandson, Larry the Awesome Father and Firefighter, is a great man, and the entire Wu family is one of Winnipeg's finest. So you're getting a lot of love today on Twitter for you coming on the show.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really appreciate that.
Jet Wu is our guest here on the program. He's a defenseman for the Moose Jaw Warriors, expected to be drafted in the upcoming 2018 NHL draft. Jet, appreciate your time this morning. Best of luck with the upcoming draft and the draft prep, and enjoy tonight's Jets game, as it were.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Jet. Thanks again. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, more on the Stanley Cup playoffs, much more on the Jets and the Golden Knights. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Part of it. Now we enter into another part of our journey, which is to reach our ultimate goal of contending for the Stanley Cup.
And so Kyle Dubas becomes the second youngest general manager in the National Hockey League. He has been with the Leafs since July 2014 when he was hired as assistant general manager. Interestingly enough, Patrick Marleau, Ron Hainsey, and Curtis McElhinney are all older.
Big thanks to Jet Wu for joining us on today's program. Best of luck to him as he enters into his 2018 NHL draft and the draft prep that comes along with that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, last night in town, he's got two shows. He's been playing before, sold-out shows every night. Mark Forward, one of the best. Check it out, RumorsComedyClub.com. Remember, anytime a playoff game goes into overtime, that means it's time for the hashtag ICOT pool. Check us out at Illegal Curve when that happens. Enter your selection as to who you think is going to score in overtime and win great prizes courtesy our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
And Carl the Old Alfer can attest to the how good it is to win an ICOT pool. He went, saw Mark Forward, said he killed it, loved it, and he was very appreciative that he won the contest.
Exactly. So be like Carl the old Alfer, and you too can win an ICOT pool presented by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
We need more OT in these playoffs.
Hasn't been a lot of OT.
How many did we have? Wasn't it like 18 in the first round?
Last year it was. Last year was crazy. Like, we couldn't even keep up with all the OT pools that were going on. This year it's been
like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd be like, all right, the Western Conference, in California game is going to OT.
Well, don't you remember that last year was, I think it was the Oilers and the Ducks. Don't you remember the story last year? It was the Oilers and the Ducks. It was a very late game. Mm-hmm. It was 3-0 Ducks as he went to bed.
Yes.
And then the Ducks staged the comeback, and he missed the entire overtime. I don't remember why I woke up. I happened to wake up, looked at my phone that I was entering. I don't know if it was the first overtime.
Well, you have
double
children.
Overtime. Yeah, it's probably had to do with my children. Anyways, I watched overtime while Mr. Ginsburg took a little
slump. I'll be there
slump.
Soon, Drew.
Yeah, only a couple more weeks there, Big Daddy.
Might be a week.
Oh, boy. You ready? Ooh.
I'm ready.
Oh, boy. That's the important part.
More about whether Nao's ready, but...
Well, she's going to take care of two children at that point in time.
We're ready. We got the car seat installed last weekend.
Oh, baby on board sticker.
Baby on board sticker on the minivan, which is the best thing.
Yeah, we've got the baby seat all ready to go in the van, so it's time, baby.
Oh, boy. Like, the baby on board sticker on the back of the minivan is my favorite thing of all time. The fact that it's on there already is like... Anyways, we've talked about it enough.
I love the van. I've said that to you before.
I know you have.
Best decision we ever made.
Yeah, well, it's eventually where you're going to be sleeping when Naomi gets sick of you and throws you out. Let's talk about Kyle Dubas. He's 32 years old. What were you doing when you guys were 32 years old?
Can we stop talking about Kyle Dubas' age?
Drew, I'm pretty sure the show.
And people keep bringing up Kyle Dubas' age. Like, he's not 11 years old. He's 32 years old.
And he's been in hockey for 15 years.
Exactly. Like, this is completely ridiculous. When Lou Lamoriello announced that he was not returning as general manager, we talked about this. What was that, 2 weeks ago, Drew?
Yeah.
And we all knew Kyle Dubas was going to be the new general manager, or at the very least, we all expected it to be Kyle Dubas. Let's stop bringing up the fact that he's 32 years old. He's a very qualified hockey guy. And we know that, he has that analytics background, but he's a scout at heart. He's a hockey guy. He's not just an analytics guy. He obviously uses that in his analysis, but he's qualified. I just think it's ridiculous that this is even mentioned in articles. Honestly.
Okay. I don't know if you guys disagree
with that. But
no, I don't disagree with you. Do you think he'll have any...
I mean, look at what Theo Epstein did in baseball.
Yeah, he was
why are we still talking about this?
Why does it matter
if you're 32 or 42?
What about his dynamic with Mike Babcock? Do you think that'll be an issue at all? Babcock is certainly a strong personality.
He wasn't at the press conference.
Do you think there's something to be read into that?
No, I was just kidding. But, I mean, Mark Hunter wasn't at the press conference either.
Well, might have something to be read into, because Mark Hunter was passed over for the job in favor of Kyle Dubas.
I would agree with that, but look at Kyle Dubas obviously was recruited by Brendan Shanahan, mm-hmm. all the work that he did with the Sioux Greyhounds of the Ontario Hockey League, mm-hmm. and we know that he was being groomed as the next general manager.
Dave, you watch the Toronto Marlies more than anybody else. More than anybody else here in Winnipeg, at least, with your coverage of the Moose, and Kyle Dubas has been responsible for the Toronto Marlies for the last number of years, and they've been an absolute AHL juggernaut. I mean, that should probably give some Leafs fans some pretty good confidence that he knows what he's doing. It's not exactly parallel to the NHL, but it seems a pretty good sign that if you can get the AHL team working on all cylinders.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it that they've built a complete juggernaut in Toronto right now, and that's a team that, is onto the conference finals now in the East of the AHL. So, and looks like a team that could very easily win the Calder Cup playoffs. So to me, I wouldn't be surprised if they do. And you know, look, I'm with Ezzie. Like, you know, if you're capable of doing a job, I really don't understand why your age should play a factor and why you need to follow a certain pattern. Like, I'm not one who really subscribes to that notion. I don't like it. I think to myself, like, if you're qualified, if you have the brains to do a job, then why shouldn't you? And the perfect example, as Ez just outlined, was Theo Epstein. I mean, here's a guy who's a young guy, didn't necessarily follow the traditional route, but you know what? Who cares? I mean, the fact of the matter is, why do you have to follow some pattern that everybody else has followed for a million years? I mean, the reality is sometimes we see people get jobs that they're not necessarily qualified for to do the general manager's job simply because of who they are and what their age is and what their role has been. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're qualified to handle the rigors of being a general manager of a professional sports team.
Well, people keep looking at when Gord Stellick was 30 years old and hired to be the Maple Leafs general manager, but they never actually follow up on the fact that that was when Harold Ballard was still owning the team and the team was an absolute embarrassment on and off the ice and an absolute disaster. So you can't, well, Gord Stellick didn't do a good job, so he's too young.
Was that, 20 years ago? I mean, you can't compare Kyle Dubas to Gord Stellick.
Well, I mean, people are. Well, we once had a 30-year-old who did a lousy job.
They're completely different people. You ask anybody in the hockey world, Drew, they say that Kyle Dubas is a very bright hockey mind. Uh-oh. And if it wasn't going to be this year, it was going to be next year. And you hear about Kyle Dubas possibly being courted by other NHL teams and the Toronto Maple Leafs not wanting Kyle Dubas to leave. I mean, it was only a matter of time. This guy's a bright hockey mind. He's done a great job with the Toronto Marlies. He's done a great job in player development and with contracts with Brendan Shanahan and obviously Lou Lamoriello prior to that. But we talked about it with Victoria Matiash about an hour ago. I mean, the Leafs have a lot of work to do here. They're going to have to bring in a top four defenseman, but you're going to lose players that you're going to have to replace. You're talking about JVR, Tyler Bozak. Thomas Plekanec, I don't think, is coming back. Are you going to re-sign Leo Komarov? Auston Matthews and William Nylander's contracts are a huge priority for Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas. It's a busy summer coming up. We don't know how successful Kyle Dubas is going to be in his first year, but I don't think that Brendan Shanahan is expecting him to step into that general manager role and deliver a Stanley Cup in year one.
Probably not, but they need to have better results. Making the playoffs isn't good enough in Toronto. They now need to start stringing together some wins,
True.
Some series
They're
wins.
Heading in the right direction.
Absolutely they are.
And Brian Burke talked about that yesterday on the broadcast when he was asked about whether the thought about Kyle Dubas, and he basically said, you know, there's different ways in which you get a franchise, and, you know, he's getting one that's already producing and already on the upswing, and there's some tweaks that need to be made. And the reality is, I'm with Ez. Like, again, like I said, I'm not overly concerned about a guy who's shown that he has a keen hockey mind and is going to be able to handle the rigors of this job.
Ezzy, can you go to the back door of the studio, please? Your wife just tweeted at us. She's outside with some food for us, and I'm not the least bit joking.
Like Nao's outside?
Like Nao's outside. She has a quote.
Shouldn't we send Rory?
We could send Rory,
too. Ezzy
is
on the air, you know.
Yeah, I know, but it is Ezzy's wife. I'll go
right now.
Okay, Ezzy's going to go get the food. Ezzy's wife is here to drop up some food, so that's a good thing for Dave and I, certainly. Dave, let me, a quick update from Golden Knights morning skate on the ice. No sign of William Carrier. He was injured in the last series. He didn't play game 6, and it's not expected to play tonight for the Golden Knights. Looks like Ryan Reeves is going to check into the lineup. The local boy, no word on how that affects Rick Ralph and their commercials, of course, but you know, looks like Ryan Reeves, local boy, will step into the Golden Knights lineup, presumably playing on that fourth line right wing spot in place of Thomas Nosek.
Yeah, and you know what? Look, Ryan Reeves, we know the kind of player he is, and you know, he's a big presence, and the fact of the matter is that I think the Golden Knights have won all the games that Ryan Reeves has played in, so, you know, he's been good. But it's interesting how many Winnipeg connections there are, or sure, Manitoba connections, and I'm sure that will be talked about a million times, of course, in the in this playoff series. But no, he definitely had some physicality. I mean, we talked about Vegas not being an overly physical team. Well, Ryan Reeves definitely changes that at team, that outlook for the team in that regard. So it'll be interesting to see but of course he's not as fast. Mm-hmm. So that again, that's an advantage to Winnipeg.
I wonder if the Golden Knights saw the success that Scott Hartnell had. I mean, whatever degree of success you want to say, but he was definitely noticeable when he was in the Predators lineup, and think that, you know, that added physicality that Ryan Reeves might bring to the table might, you know, they look at what Hartnell did, and maybe Reeves can do something similar for the Golden Knights, at least, I mean, in small samples, I would say, at best, probably, for Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, look, and the fact of the matter, he's a local guy. You know, he's going to love this opportunity to play in Winnipeg and to play against the Jets in the city that he grew up in. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity for Ryan Reeves and Cody Eakin and on and on and on about the number of connections again from Manitoba here with the Golden Knights. But again, like I said, I don't know that this Jets team really gets fazed by that. An individual player coming in, they're not going to be following the lead of set by Ryan Reeves. I think the Jets are going to try and set the tone. That's use their speed, get it, be aggressive. And I think that'll be the focus for the Winnipeg Jets, not whether Ryan Reeves is in there and he's going to be trying to be overly physical. Because the truth is, the Jets have enough players, the Ben Chiarots, the Dustin Byfuglien's, the Adam Lowry's. They're not going to drop the gloves and go toe-to-toe with Ryan Reeves because they're going to lose. Well, Byfuglien wouldn't. But the reality is that they're not going to drop the gloves and get into any shenanigans. But they've got enough guys that can stand up for themselves that they're not going to be intimidated either.
Can the Golden Knights play that sort of the same way the Predators did here in Winnipeg by putting four guys at their blue line and making the Jets' life miserable and gaining the zone with any speed? That hasn't been their style all season long.
I was going to say, no, I don't see them doing that, because the fact of the matter is you do what's been successful to get you to this point. You don't change all of a sudden everything that you've been doing because suddenly you have to adjust slightly. Now, don't get me wrong. Having said that, I still think you need to make adjustments, of course. Mm-hmm. But what I'm suggesting is you're not going to try and change, from being this type of team to that type of team simply because you think you need to adjust. You do what you've done to get you there to be successful. And you, of course, try and limit the teams that you're facing in what they've been able to do successfully. Now, again, that doesn't mean that you change everything. You've got to adjust. You know how fast the Jets are. You've got to be able to do clog up the middle a little bit. Mm-hmm. But again, Vegas cool. plays with a lot of speed. And that's the game they're going to have to play to be successful against Winnipeg.
When we come back, John Forslund is going to join us. John actually covered the Golden Knights Shark series for NBC Sports. He's also the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. So we'll talk to John about the Golden Knights. We'll talk about the Hurricanes hiring of Rod Brind'Amour and Don Waddell as their new tandem in the front office. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend John Forslund. You know John as the play-by-play broadcaster of the Carolina Hurricanes. He also covered the Golden Knights Shark series last round for NBC Sports. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Doing very well, John. Appreciate your time this morning. And we're going to get into the Carolina Hurricanes, the additions they've made to their team in this past week with Rod Brind'Amour being hired as coach and Don Waddell being named as general manager. But before that, obviously, here in Winnipeg, the focus is completely on tonight's Jets-Golden Knights Game 1 of the Western Conference Final. You saw the Golden Knights up close and personal last round in their series against the Sharks. What stood out to you the most about watching the Vegas Golden Knights up close and personal?
Obviously Marc-Andre Fleury's goaltending was spectacular. So aside from that, they defend better than I think people give them credit for, and their balance is unique and very strong. So they're not a team that you can just focus in on one core group of players and say those are the guys that absolutely have to be shut down. There's no question that Carlson's line had a terrific second round, pretty good first round, and the points support that. But when you get beyond that, they can get production right down through the list of their 1 through 12 and their forwards. And their D moved the puck exceptionally well. So there's a lot of things to like about this team. They're also playing with a lot of emotion. They have a chip on their shoulder. They've had that all season. And they're playing, I think, without pressure. I mean, this is a team that, shouldn't really be here, but they are. And if we're going back many, many months, there's no way anybody could conceive this. But here they are. They're real. And if it ends in this round, it's been unbelievably spectacular for them. If it continues, well, it's a story that no one in any professional sport has seen. Even at this point, no one has seen anything like this. So I think that's a dynamic that's working here. But the Jets, again, will just have to adjust to it, and you have to applaud Winnipeg for what they did in the previous round, because they slayed the dragon with that one, and we'll see where they go now.
John, moving away from the Stanley Cup playoffs for a moment and the big news coming out of Carolina earlier this week, the Hurricanes naming Rod Brind'Amour new head coach and Don Waddell is now the permanent general manager. What is the biggest challenge that the new regime of Waddell, Dudley, and Brind'Amour have ahead of them?
Well, I think they have to fix a few things, build a new culture, look at a talented group of young players and ask the questions why they weren't able to take a bigger step than they did this past season, and break in a new coach and also adapt to a new owner who is unconventional, a guy who's committed to wanting to win, has been extremely successful in his business past, new to hockey. And you got to balance all of that and make it all work, and make it work in an environment that needs resuscitation, in a market that has had a little bit of success over the 20-plus years that we've been here. But certainly right now it's starving for something to root for, and starving for fans to invest their money back into the team. So that's where it is right now. There is some excitement attached to Rod's appointment. There's no doubt about it. Why wouldn't there be? I mean, there hasn't been a more significant player to play for the Hurricanes, in my opinion, than Rod Brind'Amour. And he's done his apprenticeship now, 8 seasons as an assistant coach, to get this opportunity, and wants to be the guy to do all of that. So I think the next few weeks, fellas, are going to be very interesting to watch. I think the Hurricanes will be active in and around the draft, and I think they're going to start moving some people and trying to acquire some bodies back there and put the team in a better spot for the next season.
And John, you talked about the fan base, you know, wanting some success. They haven't been in the playoffs since the 2008-09 season, when they got swept in the conference finals by the Penguins. You know, it's been 9 seasons, but yet you guys still have a very loyal fan base there in Carolina. Are they willing, do you think, to put up with a little bit more time invested in the team, or do you think that they have an expectation that it's going to be a win-now culture?
Yeah, I think the now has to start to come into it. They've lived through a lot of things, and so going back to 2009, you know, there were stops and starts, and there were a lot of things that gave them a little bit of hope and some excitement. Even look way back to the beginning of the 2012 season, you know, the 11-12 season, where there was a lockout, and in that year the Jordan Staal trade was made, the signing of Alexander Semin, who had a very good first season as a Hurricane, and then after he signed that big deal, went dramatically downhill. But that summer there was a lot of juice and energy in the fan base, and they actually sold more full season tickets that summer than they did the summer after they won the Stanley Cup, believe it or not. So that was a dud, and that didn't go anywhere. So that regime was moved out. That coaching staff was moved out. Bill Peters was brought in 4 years ago with Ron Francis to methodically get through a plan to rebuild the team through drafting and developing and accruing all kinds of prospects and so on. And that's been done. So the stable is a far deeper than it had been in terms of minor league prospects, junior prospects, college prospects, and so on. But the NHL team this season, many thought, could make the playoffs and didn't, and was further off the mark than it probably should have been. So changes were made, and now I think with this new owner that's come in here, there is energy, there is excitement attached to him. But there have been some questions as to how they're going about what they're doing, and they want to see some clarity in terms of what they're going to get, you know, this summer in terms of the roster before they dive in and start to support it. But there's no question that the time has come that the business of the Carolina Hurricanes needs the support. So I think it's vital that the team make the playoffs. I thought it was last year, and it didn't happen, and so I would double down on that.
John Forslund is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster. John, what would you say, you know, to fans or to those in the media who are skeptical about Don Waddell running an NHL team, given what happened with his last stint in Atlanta?
I think it'd be fair. And I think, you know, Don might even admit to that. You know, I think when you look at what happened, I think sometimes perception is true. Sometimes you have to look deeper than perception, understand where it is. You look at some of the trades that they made, and Rick Dudley, who is going to be his right-hand guy now, was part of that. So you look at Bufflin and Wheeler and so on, and some of the guys that came to Atlanta through trades, they had a hand in it. So, yes, it didn't work. Yes, it moved to Winnipeg. You know, and you look at his body of work. He made the playoffs only once, and they were swept in four games as a general manager. So I think it's fair to be skeptical. But I think you also have to look at sometimes hockey people that are given a chance to do a job and they don't get a chance to see it through, and then who had a hand in building it. So, and when you look at where the Jets are today, it's a combination of some great decisions. So it's a combination of the foundation that came and how those players got to Atlanta in the first place, and then what Kevin Cheveldayoff and his staff has been able to do, which I think is outstanding since they've been there, and it all comes together. So, you know, this is a move that I think is going to take some time, to be fair. It's not the up-and-coming assistant general manager that's flavor of the month, and they went out and searched for, and we know that process got stunted. It never really got off the ground. So they stayed in-house with this. And Dudley was added along with Paul Kropelka, so they've kind of have a different hockey department. But again, you know, aside from there being a marriage between Waddell and Dudley in the past, that's all you're looking at. And so it's hard to gauge. And that's why I say in the next few weeks, for anybody that is interested in where the Hurricanes are headed, it's going to be exciting to watch what they do, including having the second overall pick.
John, the Washington Capitals took game one yesterday in Tampa Bay. You're very familiar with these two teams. How do you see this series playing out? Do you expect this to be a long series, or do you think Washington's going to surprise Tampa Bay and maybe make this shorter than some people think it's going to be?
Well, they could, based on what we saw last night, but I think that was just a flat, poor performance by the Tampa Bay Lightning. So until you see the real performance and then how that team that is finally gets it. So if Tampa rolls out a far better game and Washington's able to match it and exceed it, then we know that we're onto something with the Capitals. But Tampa Bay is too good, and they really found their game. Now, I saw them a great deal down the stretch of the regular season, and they were trying to find their way, and the new players are trying to find, you know, how they fit. JT Miller was better as an acquisition in the regular season than Ryan McDonough was. But then McDonough found it, and I saw them only once in the first round with New Jersey. But what I saw there was a team that could play with a high rate of pace and skill and also defend extremely well, in a goalie that recaptured his form at the front end of the season, where I think Andrei Vasilevskiy was the most dominant goalie of the first half of the year. That wasn't the case in the second half of the season, but still he's a burgeoning star goaltender, and had a terrific first round, and then they made quick work of Boston, which is pretty impressive because the Bruins were probably one of the best teams league-wide, you know, down in the second half of the season, and the record, you know, supports that. So I just want to see the Tampa Bay's A effort, see how that compares to where Washington is. But when you look at Washington and the way they're playing as a team right now, you know, it's Barry Trotz, who gets maligned a lot and has for, you know, lack of success. You know, now he's finally in the third round, and so is Ovechkin. But the three-zone play has been pretty good. Very good against Pittsburgh, and certainly was last night. So they defend well, and they're getting some saves. So we'll see. I expect Tampa Bay to win the series. But again, last night was an impressive performance by Washington.
You know, John, one of the recipes for success here in Winnipeg has been a strong AHL franchise, or at least strong prospects on the AHL franchise. You know, sticking with Carolina, the Charlotte Checkers are playing game five tonight in their second round series against the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Do they, including from our listeners might not know, they played a five overtime game, the longest in AHL history. Do they have a lot of prospects, Carolina? Does Carolina have a lot of prospects to look up forward to in the next couple of years on that Checkers team?
Yeah, yes, they do, and it's far better. And I think you have to look at that as a barometer of where you're headed. And for years, there was no playoff appearances, not only at this level but also in the American League. And that's a trouble point. And that's something that you try to avoid. You look at, you know, where Columbus is right now. Well, a few years ago, Jared Bednar, who's now in Colorado, right, was winning the Calder Cup, you know, in Cleveland with that team. And they're a young and up and coming organization. Now they're a team that's going to knock on the door of a playoff spot and push for more, on an annual basis as you get kind of into a 10-year cycle. That's what happened with the Hurricanes. It was barren. Ron replenished that. You know, Ron Francis did a lot of good here too in terms of that, trades that he had to make with big contracts and accruing the prospects and the draft choices that came attached to those, trading deadline deals that he made. And now those players are playing in Charlotte. So there's far too many to start rattling off here. The thing about the Hurricanes organization is, not all will make it. There's not enough room. So that's why I think if they're smart, they can start packaging some of these guys to give them a chance to go elsewhere, to get an opportunity to play at the higher level, to make the National League team better. And so they have the ability to package assets now for the first time in a long while. But the Charlotte team, you know, this has been a good run for them. There's no doubt they're down 3-1. They're coming off the 5 overtimes, as you point out. But they're a team that could have won the Calder Cup this year. I don't know if they will. It'll be a miracle to come back and beat Lehigh Valley, but they're a deep team. They're a deep team when you look at the fact that there's a young kid, Warren Fogle, who had a 20-goal season, who's a third, fourth-line player there, who came up at the end of the year after he had an outstanding training camp, played for the Hurricanes, scored a couple of goals, and he's a guy that's going to challenge for a spot on the team next year. So they go deep with their prospects in Charlotte, and hopefully that's going to help the team here.
John, we're this far into the interview, and we haven't even asked you about the Hurricanes holding the number 2 overall pick in the 2018 NHL draft. I mean, whether the Hurricanes take Andrei Svechnikov, or whether they take Filip Zadina, how important is nailing this draft pick going to be for the Hurricanes franchise?
Oh, vitally important. So the last time they had the second overall pick was Eric Staal, right? So you get an opportunity to get a dynamic player that can be part of your organization for a long time. There's always a chance that someone's going to, you know, knock your socks off with a proposed deal. I don't see that, and they haven't suggested that. But I think they'd be foolish just to say, well, we're going to hang on to it no matter what. I think they have an opportunity to maybe look at something here. And if it's a blockbuster, okay. We don't see a lot of those, you know, surrounding the top 3 picks. But certainly when you look at this opportunity right now, whether it be the two players you mentioned, Svechnikov, I think, has the inside track on that second overall pick by most of the people you read about and look at in terms of forecasting this situation. But he brings a generational type of ability that they're going to need, and they have been challenged to score goals. And so that's an organizational need, too. So, yeah, that's exciting. And when you get a player like that, It's a premier player, potentially. So you don't want to fool around with it. The Jets have been in that position. Look what happened there. So you get that chance, and you move up the amount of picks that they did. So much luck on their side to go from where they were to get to number 2. They have to make good on it, and I think they will. And that's another reason to believe that they can surround that young player with more and really start to put something together here.
John Forslund is the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. John, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, guys, anytime. Good luck with this series, and good luck to the Jets.
Thanks, John. Take care of yourself. When we come back, the Manitoba Moose season came to an end last night. We'll talk about that, talk more about the Jets and the Golden Knights. One final segment to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
6-3 to score. The puck is dropped. The seconds will come off the clock. And the horn sounds. The Rockford IceHogs are Central Division champions, defeating the Manitoba Moose 6-3 to take the series in 4 consecutive games. An outstanding season comes to an end for the Manitoba Moose.
With a whimper, not a bang, the Manitoba Moose go out in the second round of the AHL playoffs. They got swept last night by the Rockford Ice Hogs, thus ending the Manitoba Moose season. You heard Mitch Peacock there on the call refer to it as a successful Manitoba Moose season, Dave. Would you agree with that assessment? I mean, you watch the Moose more than anybody else. Is there any, I mean, obviously a disappointing end to the year, losing in the second round, losing in four straight in the second round. But is there any doubt that this has still been a successful year for the Manitoba Moose?
Absolutely not. I mean, it was a phenomenal year for this team. I mean, they were first place for 133 days during the regular season, but you can't discount losing Jack Rozovic to the Jets. You lost Michael Hutchinson to the Jets, Tucker Poolman to the Jets. Sammy Niku was not even close to being 100%. Mason Appleton's been out since the second game of the first round with a concussion, and Brendan Lemieux missed the last game. So to me, I mean, this is not a Manitoba Moose team that we saw all season long. Now, they're not going to make that excuse. They had able players that were still in the lineup. Sammy Niku did play all the games. He just wasn't at 100% in my mind. But no, you have to absolutely define this as a successful season. I mean, they've had prospects go up and play games with the Winnipeg Jets. They've had players, blossom. Like I said, Mason Appleton, rookie of the year in the AHL. Sammy Niku, top defender. I mean, this is a team, because remember, ultimately at the end of the day, every team wants to win. Every team wants to win that championship. But the Moose are a feeder team for the Jets. And to my mind, they're doing what they need to do. This is a 2015 draft class. Michael Spacek, Jansen Harkins. Remember, like, that's what I always talk about with people. Mm-hmm. Life isn't a sprint. It's, you know, it's a marathon. And the truth is, it's the same with a lot of prospects. You got to give these guys time. I talked about it last night, actually, with former NHLer Scott Campbell on Twitter. We were just talking about Eric Comrie, and I said, it's third-year pro. Think of Corey Schneider. Corey Schneider is behind Roberto Luongo, played 3 years in the AHL with a team called the Manitoba Moose, and then got his opportunity in the NHL. You know, similarly with Eric Comrie, you know, he's a young goaltender, has a lot of games, but 150 professional games now. And, you know, he's getting his opportunity. I think he'll still play in the AHL next year, but he'll have a chance to you know, Steve Mason gets hurt, something happens, he'll get his chance in the NHL. So I think the team had a very, very successful year.
And Dave, further to your point, you mentioned some of the great prospects that the Jets have and contributed to the Moose's excellent season, especially Mason Appleton and Sammy Niku, and the first half of the season, Jack Rozovic. And then you look at some of the other players that were added late in the season. Skylar McKenzie, 2017 draft pick, comes over from the Portland Winterhawks. CJ Cease, a late draft pick. He joined the Manitoba Moose after his career with Minnesota State University. So, I mean, the Moose have every reason to believe that they're going to be competing for a Calder Cup next year. And sure, some players are going to graduate and move along to the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. Tucker Poolman and Jack Rozovic have already done that, but the future looks very bright for the Moose. So as you said, Drew, I mean, they get swept in the second round by the Rockford IceHogs, but it was a very successful season. I echo Dave's thoughts. I mean, they didn't end up, you know, getting to the Calder Cup final like they wanted to, but getting to the second round and considering that they had injuries and players that were called up with the Jets, I think you got to look at this season as a success and really, you know, congratulate Pascal Vincent and his coaching staff for the excellent job that they did this year.
Absolutely. I mean, it certainly is a long way from where the Moose were the bottom feeders in the AHL like they were a couple years ago when you had guys on the team who really were just fringe prospects at best, and the future wasn't really bright in the Jets, in the Moose organization in terms of being the feeder system for the Winnipeg Jets. But we see now with these more prospects, a guy like Logan Stanley should play a big role for the Manitoba Moose next year. He didn't get into any of the games, but he was officially assigned to the Moose in time for the playoffs.
Yeah, and you could have a guy like Christian Vesalainen. So, I mean, you've got a lot of prospects here on the Manitoba Moose team that are getting their opportunities. And you know, we saw a guy like Chase DeLeo really blossom in the playoffs. I mean, he had an OKC year. He had a couple of injuries, but really took his game to another level in the playoffs. And it's interesting. It's something we're going to talk about with Pascal, Coach Vincent, at the end when the, you know, cleanup day or whatever they call it, wrap-up day.
Garbage bag day,
some people call it. So, but, you know, he's talked about how the importance of playoffs and how playoff games really tell you so much more about a player's game than the regular season does, which is interesting because, of course, playoffs are a lot shorter than a full 76-game season in the AHL. So, to me, it'll be an interesting series. We'll have it all on IllegalCurve.com.
That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guest, Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun, Victoria Mariash of ESPN.com, Ben Raby, Jet Wu, and John Forsland. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Rory McGoran doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN Radio 1290.
As long as you set the yardage, the team will be all right.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.